Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. The pandemic seems destined to change the shape of cities and how its citizens live for decades to come. The question is how.
The future of urban Latin America is medium-sized cities, and those, in my opinion, are going to grow. And COVID will give us a beautiful lesson on the kind of city that we do not want anymore.
Let's be honest. Latin America does not have the best group of presidents right now. If you're looking for quality leadership of any ideological flavor, leaders who are creative, evidence-based, capable of building consensus with new ideas aimed at making life better for all their constituents, there's really not a lot of options at the presidential level in the region right now. Just my opinion. But when it comes to Latin America's mayors, now there are some really interesting figures right now. Whether it's Horacio Rodriguez Larreta in Buenos Aires, or Claudia Sheinbaum in Mexico City, or Daniel Quintero in Medellin, Claudia Lopez in Bogota, these are quality leaders. And look, you don't have to agree with them on everything, but these are innovative, pragmatic people who are not resorting to this polarization strategy we see among so many presidents. And there's lots of good leadership at the local level. And that's going to be really important as we look ahead to the next 6 to 12 months and the world hopefully begins to pick up the pieces from this pandemic. Because after all, Latin America is the most heavily urbanized region in the world, and so what happens at the municipal level will be key. And I think we're all asking ourselves right now, how is city life in Latin America going to be different after all this? Will long-ignored problems like mobility and housing finally be addressed by leadership, or will things just get worse? And what are the political implications as well? To help me make sense of these questions and the lessons that the pandemic is teaching us about cities, I'm joined from Mexico City by my good friend, Eugene Zapata Garache. Eugene is the Managing Director for Latin America and the Caribbean at the Global Resilient Cities Network. Eugene, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. A pleasure to be here again with you and with America's Quarters, the audience.
Eugene, tell me this question that I've just raised. Why do you think we're still capable of electing good mayors, but we're struggling so much with presidents? And by the way, I mean, I framed this about Latin America. It's true in other countries as well. But why do you think this is?
I think in Latin America, we should look a little bit at our history to answer that question. Democracy came to the region with a very centralized approach. And after dictatorships started to disappear, we got political systems that placed a bet on national development policies and not local development policies. There's differences from one country to the other, but this has been going on for decades. And in recent years, Latin American countries have gone, as you rightly mentioned, this amazing and huge process of urbanization. So people moved from the rural areas to the cities. And cities became very big, and very big with very big problems, but also with very big opportunities. And local leadership started in Latin America to become the real leadership. Let's not forget that mayors are the closest elected authority to the people. People know where they live. They can go and knock on their doors. They know where their kids go to school. And in our countries, with so many challenges from the economic, political, and social point of view, we're still a very inequitable region with a lot of problems. Proximity of leadership is key. Not all the national policies that are mostly cookie-cutter approaches, one-size-fits-all solutions, they don't apply to every single municipality, every single territory. So I think that's part of the reasons why we see today a strong leadership coming from grassroots origins. And you mentioned some of the amazing mayors, but these are the ones that are in office today. We could name mayors that have really changed the landscape of Latin America in the past few decades. Let's not forget Aníbal Gaviria in Medellin or the mayor of Curitiba, who completely changed urban mobility in the whole continent.
Now, do you think voters are also just looking for different things? I mean, the polarization and sort of the culture wars that I suppose are front and center for so many presidents. With mayors, they're being looked to, you know, really focus on very pragmatic, practical things. Do you think that's part of it?
That's also part of it. If you think about it, a mayor wakes up every single morning. He or she has to deal with what's happening in the immediate surroundings. So a day in the life of a mayor is one of the most fascinating things. I had the honor and the pleasure of being next to the mayor of Mexico City for almost 8 years. And I tell you, there's not a moment of boredom or a moment of idleness. There's a lot happening. And one thing that it's important, Brian, is that the legal frameworks in most Latin American countries are very clear on what competencies go to the municipal level and what goes to the national level. But that is only on paper. In real life, and COVID is one very good example, mayors have to deal with everything, regardless if they have the legal competencies or the resources to face those challenges, because as I said, they're the closest authority to the people. And people, just a normal person, doesn't understand if this is a competency or not of the mayor or of the president or the minister.
Eugene, we've known each other for a couple of years now, and you're not only a member of America's Quarterly's editorial board, but also just, I've told you this before, one of my favorite intellectuals in Latin America, period. And in your position there at Global Resilient Cities Network, you have been looking for years at the challenges that Latin America cities will face in the 21st century. Was pandemic high on the list of problems that, you know, were sort of out there that you guys were watching?
In some cities, in some countries, a pandemic was high in the agenda, and in others, it was not. In Mexico City, it did come on the top of the agenda, because remember that Mexico City was the center of the H1N1 flu. And so here there was a center for epidemics that was created, and there was a policy to anticipate pandemics. But with change in government, it was no longer a priority. So I have to say that if the word and the problem was in the radar, it was not really listed as a priority, and especially not for such an immediate period of time.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure anybody saw this coming. Well, let's look across the region now at the way cities have responded to this pandemic. And look, I want to be clear as we frame this discussion that, you know, there have been a lot of stories over the last 4 or 5 months since we sort of descended into this daily hell about cities and states and countries that have done well. And then inevitably, there's another set of stories like a month later that say, oh, look, this city that or country that we thought was doing well, now it's been overtaken by this thing. And I think it's ultimately testimony to just the devastating nature of this virus. So that said, and recognizing that nobody's perfect and nobody's immune, Eugene, where do you think the relative success stories have been so far as we look around the region?
It is a hard question for the reasons that you rightly express. I mean, and also because the successes of stories can become nightmares in a few weeks' time, and the nightmares can become success stories on the opposite way, and we've seen it. Just to mention a few of those stories, I mean, we saw how Guayaquil, for example, in Ecuador, became the terrible example of how not to deal with the pandemic, with people dying on the streets. And Guayaquil, after some months, is starting to revert those trends and doing a better job in dealing with the pandemic than other cities that had been doing better at the beginning of the pandemic, which was, for example, the case of Medellin. Medellin in Colombia, of course, has been identified as the case story in Latin America. It was for the first 3 months. Part of it was because they started very early on focusing on data. So I remember the mayor, and this is a new mayor that was just appointed to office earlier this year. He said it is impossible to treat the virus without information. So they came up with this app that has not been immune to criticisms. It traces people and it asks for a lot of personal information. And this has helped the city government to know what is happening with people. It even helps vulnerable populations to get food and get money. But of course, there's a lot of concern about privacy of people's life and what the city will do with that kind of information once the pandemic is over. But it did work. It worked to a point that we were at mid-June, this is not even a month ago, and the city of Medellin with 2.5 million inhabitants had less than 4 deaths while we were seeing thousands of deaths.
Yeah, but of course now, fast forward to the middle of July where we are now, and they're going into lockdown.
Exactly. So you see how the success story and the tools, the policies, and the strategies that they put in place were being copied across the region. It worked because they anticipated, but it did not work when they did not lock down as hard as they should have.
But maybe, you know, I mean, who knows how we'll look at all this once it's over, right? Maybe it was a success story, in that maybe success is just buying yourself time. If the virus is damn near inevitable, keeping in mind that there are places in the world like Vietnam and you know, other places where they've really, really kept it out. But if you've got virus among your population, maybe the best you can hope for is to just keep this thing at bay long enough for you to, you know, do the things like expanding ICU capacity and acquiring ventilators, at least until we get a vaccine.
Right. And another factor, I think, and this makes me think of another city that has been doing a very interesting job, is Buenos Aires. It's not only about the health crisis. What has happened in every single domain of life today is as big as what is happening health-wise. It turned into a domino effect where it was a greater economic problem or a greater social problem than a health problem. Talking about Buenos Aires, I think this is one of the cities in the region that understood this early on, and it started looking at health issues like bed capacity, like bringing more doctor's equipment. But they started looking at water, at waste, at transport, at the elderly, at children, and of course, at jobs and employment. Very early on. And I think that is the challenge, Brian. I think that is a real challenge today is the day after, because the consequences are so big that the health issue is, of course, at the top of the agenda, but it's not the only issue.
Is there anybody out there? I want to get into those questions about where cities are headed. But before we get there, you know, Buenos Aires gets cited as an example these days. Buenos Aires is pretty wealthy. I'm not sure if it's per capita the wealthiest big city in Latin America, but if it's not, it's pretty close. Is there any city out there, it doesn't have to be one of the big capitals, but is there any city that is doing a lot with a little? Is there anybody at sort of the low-income, mid-income spectrum within Latin America who has, you know, and maybe they haven't even ultimately contained case count, but at least has done the best job possible or something close to that in terms of responding to this thing?
I think you're right. Buenos Aires is a relatively rich city. The government of Buenos Aires is a robust institution. And when you think about their capacity to mobilize resources, I'm not talking only about money, but resources from an institutional perspective. Of course, their muscle to combat the pandemic is bigger than what you would find in a smaller city. What I have seen is that smaller cities have been mostly geared by national policies, because I mentioned earlier, not all local governments have legal competencies on all topics, and health is one of those. It varies from country to country, but normally a municipality, a city, does not have health amongst its primary competencies.
Yeah, they're not going to be the ones to go buy ventilators for the most part.
Exactly. But you have the exceptions. I mean, Mexico City alone has 22,000 doctors, and they work for the government of Mexico City. But those are the exceptions, the big capital cities. But when you ask me the questions about smaller cities, I haven't seen it. And one of the reasons why Guayaquil, for example, which is a medium-sized city, 2.5 million, just like Medellin, one of the problems that we saw there and that was perhaps the hardest is that you could immediately see how COVID was amplifying exclusion. Inequalities that already existed in the city were very rapidly worsened because of the pandemic. You could see how better off families who could afford private doctors could just go and have a test performed on them, or even buy private oxygen. You know, even that word private oxygen makes me, I don't know, shiver.
So let's talk about these long-term consequences for cities. Cities are ground zero for these pandemics all over the world. It's the biggest cities, the densest cities that are getting hit the hardest. Here in the United States, where I'm speaking from today, as well as in Latin America, there have been all kinds of speculation about, you know, maybe cities suffer over time as a result of this. Maybe density will go down. You'll have fear of taking public transportation that may last for months, if not longer. maybe people gravitating towards teleworking. That's not a reasonable expectation for most people in Latin America, but you know, it will be for some. And we've seen some cases like the Brazilian investment management company XPer, which announced recently it would open a new headquarters way outside of Sao Paulo and also offer some employees the option of working from home permanently. Eugene, what do you expect? I mean, I guess everybody in who looks at urban issues has an opinion on this one right now, but what do you think the permanent impact is going to be on Latin American cities?
I think that cities will continue to be a magnet. They are the clearest example of economies of scale. When you look at a city that is compact, that has basic services, that has cultural offerings, and that is a nice place to live in, and there's jobs and there's opportunity, I don't think that a city will end being that. I mean, they are spaces for opportunity, and I think they will continue to be so. I think the pandemic has brought a very welcome change to the way we look at urban development. Cities were built for cars, and now we're seeing that we do not necessarily have to do everything in a car. So there's going to be a transition on urban mobility. There's going to be a transition on the use of public space. And as you mentioned, not for everyone, but teleworking is going to be an option for some. And the digital economy is coming. We are going to see very soon the end of paper and metal money. And that has an amazing impact in cities, and it could be a huge opportunity for city governments to get a clear hold on taxation, for example, and corruption, and making a more robust financial base for their policies. So no, I don't think that COVID will bring a great future for Latin American cities. I think that, as you mentioned, they are mayors and local authorities are innovating. They have shown that they cannot wait for solutions to come from national governments or capital cities. And many of the mayors that we have mentioned today, like Claudia Lopez or Claudia Sheinbaum, I mean, they have their own agenda. It's not necessarily always aligned with the central government's agenda. So I think local leadership will continue to thrive. I think the urbanizations will not stop. Remember, they were before the nation states even came into being in this planet. It was a world of cities before a world of nation states. And I definitely believe that we're going back in that direction, not the opposite.
But let me push back just a little bit here. If it's going to be another, say, 9 to 12 months before a vaccine is widely available everywhere, and particularly in parts of Latin America may not be an exception and may even get the vaccine later than some other parts of the world, isn't that going to push people away and sort of make people take a good hard look at the circumstances they're living in, make them averse to public transportation? Not everybody certainly has the option of affording a car. And of course, if everybody who can afford a car climbs into their car, traffic is already, you know, bad enough in places like Lima, Mexico City, Sao Paulo, so on. I don't know. I mean, I realize that in the Latin American context, you know, we think of this issue here in the United States, and here it's very different. People are, you know, talking about leaving the city and going to suburbs. Obviously, the very design and architecture of Latin American cities is very different. But I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, aren't people going to get scared away?
I think that the people who will get scared away are the people who can afford to get scared away. Most of the population that lives in Latin American cities is not rich. Most of the people that come to our cities come looking for jobs, for opportunity, and they cannot afford to go back to some rural area where there's no jobs or where there's no opportunity. So yeah, there might be a segment of the population who is going to be scared and says, hey, I'll take my car and just go to the countryside and do something for a living because I can do telework. But for those who came from far away and went to the city to build a new life, I think that there's no way back because you cannot afford it. You cannot ask the population from the Brazilian favelas to go away from the cities.
Yeah, no, that's a very important point. And I guess it leads to my other concern, which is that if people who are able, move away. And to be clear, look, I mean, there are some exceptions. Like in Sao Paulo, you have communities like Alphaville, which are these gated communities, and every city has versions of that, but they're not, you know, this is not a huge option, at least not yet, for large numbers of people. But, you know, you think about people moving away to some of these medium-sized cities, some of this dislocation, and forgive me for mentioning Sao Paulo again, but it's the Latin American city that I lived in most recently. There are, you know, there was already a flow of businesses and people away from the big city of Sao Paulo to, you know, kind of other comparatively more prosperous places in Sao Paulo state. And I guess the concern is you end up with a situation where, you know, cities are more unequal and have had part of their tax base desert them and end up being more difficult places to live than they were before.
You're totally right. And when I'm thinking about cities in Latin America, I'm not thinking about just the megalopolis in Latin America. There has been a very clear trend for the biggest urban conglomerates of the continent of a reduction in their population. Mexico City has not grown in population for quite a few years. On the contrary, people, as you rightly say, they have gone out of Mexico City, especially people with the means, and they have gone to neighboring cities like Querétaro, Puebla, Cuernavaca, which were small towns 10, 15 years ago, and that now there are over a million inhabitants in those cities. So what I see is not necessarily the growth of the big Buenos Aires, Sao Paulo, and Mexico cities. What I see coming, and I think it's a very exciting picture for the continent, the growth of the medium-sized cities, what we call ciudades intermedias, that sweet spot between the small municipality that is perhaps, I don't know, 20 to 50,000 inhabitants, and the big city of 5 million or more. No, I'm talking about the cities of a million, 1.5, 2, that we will see more and more coming, where leadership is real, where innovation is real, where community participation is real, and when you can have a territorial approach to development, meaning that all the actors can come together, they can sit in a table, they can think about the challenges of the city and get their act together. That is very difficult when you want to do it at the level of Sao Paulo or the level of Buenos Aires or Mexico City. In those big cities, it's the government that counts, because it's the government that has the muscle. But in medium-sized city, it's not the government that counts only. It's the stakeholders that represent different interests and segments. I don't know, I'm thinking of Cuenca in Ecuador, for example. Cuenca, not even 400,000 inhabitants. When you go to Cuenca and you realize that the main actors of this city, they know each other. And the city's growing, it's a very attractive place to go to. So that's the future. I think it's the future of urban Latin America is medium-sized cities. And those, in my opinion, are going to grow. And COVID will give us a beautiful lesson on the kind of city that we do not want anymore. And then the space is open. It's a white, empty sheet of paper for us to draw and imagine and dream on what kind of city we want for the future of our continent, because we have already gone through a lot of experience and bad experience on cities that were built for the wrong reasons and with the wrong purposes, and we suffer them.
So what do you think these mayors in these medium-sized cities need to do to take advantage of the current situation and make sure that this shift happens in the most constructive way possible? What are the 3, 4, or 5 kind of areas that are most important in terms of focus?
The first thing I would say is that mayors should listen better and with wider and bigger ears to population today, because I don't think that we have to expect the governments to come with all the solutions. So I think that more than ever, local development is about building consensus and planning strategically with an eye in the long term. You cannot solve the future of your city with your eye put on a political mandate only. So mayors come and go. This is a very big lesson for Latin America, because it's one continent where re-election of the mayors is mostly an exception. So we tend to start all over every time that mayors come. So I think put in place the institutional capacity to do long-term planning. So each city has a mission, or should build itself a vision on what it wants to be. Remember how Medellin used to be the most violent city in the world, and then it suddenly changed its vision and started constructing a different narrative of itself that a lot of people bought into. And now we don't see Medellin anymore as it was.
Now it's the teacher's pet. You know, it does virtually everything right.
Exactly. So the, and also one important thing is that the pandemic, let's not forget, it has been perhaps the most terrible pandemic in the history of the world because we know about it. Not because it has been. It's just because the information today is so permanent and so instantaneous that everybody knows what's happening in every single moment anywhere in the world. So I think information is important. You have to talk to people, listen to people, and communicate, communicate. And for communication, you need data. You need real, trustful data. That's the only way, and perhaps going back to the Medellin example and quoting the mayor, it was impossible to face the virus without information. So I think cities should make an effort to gather data, and technology today is a very good opportunity, and it's easier than before to have real lifetime data on how the city is behaving. And with those two things in hand, we should revisit urban mobility. I really think that pollution and, of course, carbon-based energy is not the future. So that means that cities are going, hopefully very soon, to turn into different kinds of pathways, not only for motorized cars, but also, as we all want, you know, for pedestrians and kids and bicycles. So urban mobility is a big challenge. That's one. Public space is a big challenge. And I think in Latin America, as always, it's social equality. I mean, we're still a very unequal region. COVID has put that even more at the top of the agenda. I think that cities have to address this in a more comprehensive way. Social policies have mostly been national because of the way the system was conceived. But more and more, local authorities and local governments have to look into inequality. And it's not only economic inequality, it's also spatial inequalities. You mentioned, you know, those closed gates, neighborhoods where policemen and a door divide, you know, the poor from the rich. That's something that a city mayor can deal with or try to help to build those bridges between those populations that today don't necessarily talk to each other.
Well, and it strikes me listening to you talk, Eugene, that these solutions that you're proposing for cities, listening, embracing data, thinking about the environment, worrying about inequality, these are solutions that every leader at every level of government should have in mind right now, which brings us back to how we started. So, you know, thank you very much for joining us today, Eugene. It's been a great conversation. I learned a lot.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Thanks for listening to the America's Quarterly Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly Podcast is produced by Brendan O'Boyle and Katie Hopkins. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of America's Society and the Council of the Americas. This has been Brian Winter. Thanks for joining us.